Eric, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm trying to get back in the saddle this morning. How are you?
I'm terrific. Thank you.
Yeah, we went out of town all last week, so.
Uh-oh, that's always disruptive, isn't it, huh?
Yeah, it's supposed to be relaxing. Did Wake Forest win that game the other night?
Well, they at least showed up. You know, yeah. That would have been a 52-0 game traditionally.
Right.
So it was, they gave us, I think 32-16 or something like that. We got a few points.
Okay. I saw the 16, I think, show yeah. up. So anyway, they looked all right. Trying to think, one of the guys that, graduated with my son went and played over there. I'm trying to think of the kid's name.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. He's a cornerback.
Oh, fun.
Is it Usain Bassey?
Oh, that's neat. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know him, but,
yeah, I don't know how he's, you know, I don't know if he's playing this year or whatever he did. I know he got some playing time last year.
Well, that's great. Congratulations. That's fun.
Yeah, it was fun. We had, yeah, another kid went to Vanderbilt or whatever. So. Anyway, how are you? You good?
I'm good. Yeah, I just had a terrific bike ride, and you know, I bike Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Now I'm back in my routine. I do that on the island in Boca Grande, Florida. But I get to Nashville, I gotta figure things out again. You know, you start sort of start over when you. I moved to Nashville about 8 months ago, and I've got. You know, I bike ride and I do a little of this. Now I got a place to practice golf. I've got a nice bike trail that I ride, and I'm, you know, I'm back in my routine, so I'm good.
Good. Well, that is good. I rode last night in honor of you.
Oh, you did? Way to go.
Oh, it's just, I've got a little, when I feel like I'm training, I ride, there's about a 16, and you can stretch it out to 20 mile, but it's at least a 16 mile out and back, you know.
Perfect.
You can stretch it out. So I went, yeah, I rode a Friday up in the mountains. I took the low road though, and take the high road, and then rode last. When I decide there's a ride up at the end of the month, that I've ridden for the last 3 years called Six Gap. Ride, it's up in the mountains of North Georgia, and I'm just not in the same shape that I was in the past. So I might ride, there's a 3-gap ride where you just ride half of it, but.
Is it like 100 miles or something?
It's a little over 100. Yeah, 105 miles, up 6 mountain peaks. And then you do, I think the total climb is like 12 or 13,000 feet or something. Pretty insane. There's two of the peaks that are, one of them is just, it's not meant to be ridden on a bicycle.
I mean,
it's just not supposed to be.
Are these dirt bikes or road bikes?
These are road bikes.
Yeah, sometimes the road bikes don't have the gears of the mountain bikes, and it's really hard work.
Well, it would be nice to be able to switch, you know, right during that time period to a mountain bike.
Yeah, because they have another set of gears usually. And,
So
I enjoy, we did the, what we call the Hilly 100 in India. And it's pretty good. I mean, it's, you know, you really get flying down the hills.
Oh yeah. That's the fun part.
Yeah.
That's the part that worries my wife.
Right. Yeah, my daughter too. She's like, I don't want to do that. You know, it's too fast. Yeah.
Well, I might do it, but I talked to my daughter. I do sort of have a goal right the second. I made the comment yesterday to my daughter about, she was talking about how to get Instagram famous. And she's got a little art business and she's really done well. She's doing extremely well, actually. So I said, how can I get Instagram famous? She said, we have to do something that people are interested in. And I was like, oh gosh. She said, well, what about biking? You know, you're a guy that's over 50. I guess you could, you know, come up with some kind of thing and maybe you'd have other guys that are over 50 do the challenge with you or something. I was like, okay, I'm not going to do this on Instagram, but riding 100 miles a week, you know, that's it.
Well, that's good. That would be, we'd have to do 5 days a week or 20 miles.
Yeah.
So that would be, I'd have to do Saturday and Sunday.
Right. You do have to throw in the weekend for sure. And that has to be your longer rides.
Yeah, I can do that. I can do 100 easy.
Wow. I told her it's a little bit more challenging than what you think, because 5 days a week, 20 miles, that's one thing. If you'd only do it 3 days a week and then throw in the weekends, you know, you got to figure it out.
So I do Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I just have to do Saturday and Sunday, my normal ride. And I've had my 5 days.
How far did you get going?
But I need to have, you need some recovery time too. So that's why I do Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then I used to swim Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And then when I was young, I'd run every day. So it was pretty intense. You know, that was pretty fun.
Yeah, that is very intense.
Yeah. Well, I was doing triathlons, you know, and stuff. So.
Well, good for you. I've done one triathlon. It was a sprint triathlon. I almost drowned.
Right. I did the sprints. I didn't do the big ones.
Right.
But I did do some hiking. I did some serious hiking, which is something you really want to do, because it opens up the world to you. Mm-hmm. You'll see things that you normally wouldn't see, and you go places you wouldn't go. So I had never really seen the United States. I had been blessed to travel all over the world, but never really vacationed, you know, in the parks and all that. And when you hike, you know, you do serious hiking, you'll see all the great peaks of the country. And that's fabulous.
Yeah.
That's what you want to do with your daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I worked up in Yellowstone National Park back in college.
Oh, wow. So you know the whole thing.
Yeah, but I don't do it as much. I mean, we went up to North Georgia, you know, we're right off the Appalachian Trail, and it's just gorgeous up there. Beautiful.
God. I mean, the pictures and the things you get, I'm a photographer too. So, you know, I'm spending most of my time taking pictures, you know, and I hike to get to a position to get a great shot. That's why I love the hiking, but the photography is fabulous. And then we make these big books. All the guys get together and submit their pictures to Tom Cross, who edits it and then puts it into a book. And then we ship it out, and it's, I have them right there.
Oh, that's
the Himalayas,
so
cool. You know, we go up, you know, we've done Machu Picchu and the Himalayas and Kilimanjaro and
wow.
You know, just
you've
really
done some great things. Wow, that's fantastic. Those are everything I like.
You know, I'm 74 now, and I think I'm in, you know, reasonably good condition, but it's it's harder. Because you're going to end up with getting something, whether it's, you know, something hard or cancer or something. And it always kind of puts a crimp in that international plan to do these exotic things. And you don't need to go crazy. You just want to take advantage of the time. This 60 to 70 is a special time. Mm-hmm. You really want to be in a position where you can control your time.
Yeah.
You don't want to work like a maniac till you're 70, because those 10 years, you can't get them back. It's like your children's years. You can't get your children's years back. You can't say, well, I'll be a good dad the next time. You know, you miss those years. They're gone. Everybody feels fine at 60. They feel the same as they did at 50, but the problem is at 70, you start to feel a little different. And, you know, at 80, you feel a little different. I mean, you know, your clients at 85 aren't doing what they were doing at 60. Some of them maybe, but they're going to be the rare exception. And so you got to be really taking care of yourself But my brother always used to say, you can look 10 years younger than you are, but that's about it. And you can feel about 10 years younger than you are, but that's about it. You can't go 30 years. You know, some days like today, right now, I feel like I'm 35, right? No. But some days you don't, you know, some days you don't. And Corona's been great for me because I usually get a cold or I get sick or something happens because I've got an immune, you know, a compromised immune system. So I got to be careful. But this has been fabulous. I don't get sick now.
That's good for you. That's knock great. On wood. Yeah, knock on wood. Let's find some.
All right. So what did you find? What questions do you have? What's on your mind supernova-wise?
Well, I've had a pretty good number of meetings. They've gone well. You know, so I wrote down some notes from those. Small households, which I'm going to struggle, so I'm really going to have to focus on that. Set up a couple of center of influence meetings, and then just trying to review my book too, and you know, rethinking some of these areas where I just have just a lot of potential. But I've got all these folders too, so. That's sort of where I am right this second. But I've had good luck. I went and met with my biggest client the Friday before I went out of town.
Yep.
And so he's, you know, he's my biggest individual client. He's got a little over $5 million with me or so. And he was cordial. But we hadn't talked in the last 2 months. And part of that was we had, you know, I had a wedding in between and I had all sorts of reasons for on my side for not reaching out to him. And he, you know, obviously he could have, and he has picked up the phone before and, you know, contacted me too. We usually have a pretty good dialogue, but what I found out in that is the last time we had talked, what I had suggested was discussing, I've been his portfolio manager. You know, for all these years, probably 15 years.
You've been a what? The manager?
I've been the portfolio manager for him. You know, and I've got discretion and things. And I talked to him about the possibility of bringing in somebody else, you know, outsourcing the portfolio management piece of it. And so his interpretation that I was suggesting that I reassign his account to somebody, which is a horrible miscommunication, right? So we clarified that, it wasn't like he gave me a pass on that. You know, he reminded me of how much in fees he was paying and that kind of stuff. And, so it didn't start off to be a great conversation, but, anyway, I apologized. I was very prepared going to the meeting though. And, you know, I kind of took him the direction that I felt like all this is going, you know, I created a financial plan for him, which he said I had done a while back, but this was more formal. So I'd taken the last 3 years of his spending, went through and gave him a, you know, portfolio review as well on the financial plan. But we had a lot of discussion about his expectations and he was really, it's interesting how we kind of leave ourselves in the mindset of the broker, you know, stockbroker relationship. He was still in the mindset of a real, you know, stockbroker type relationship. You know, because I have given him, you know, recommendations and suggestions and we talk a lot about stocks, individual securities and that kind of stuff over the years. But he understood that, he acknowledged that, this was a much more holistic approach. And we talked about, you know, kind of broader opportunities within his portfolio. And then we moved into the whole, you know, talk about supernova. And I said, I've gotten a coach. And he said, well, tell me more about this coach. And so we spent probably 30 minutes talking about you and the, you know, the process, your background and, sort of the desire to improve the customer client experience, you know, satisfaction, you know, making sure that you're connected. And he liked that approach a lot. He got more excited at that part of the conversation, than obviously the previous part of it. But he, you know, was pretty clear to state that he would appreciate the regularity, you know, the frequency of the meetings much more, planned. He liked that, you know, the idea that it would be much more disciplined, planned meetings than what we, and he said, he likes the calls and likes to be able to pick up the phone in between, but he said the baseline would be huge, you know, for him. And then I felt like there was some minor skepticism, you know, about would I be able to follow through with this, you know, kind of promise that we were talking about. And, but he didn't dwell on that too much. I did notice, but he's generally on board, with everything. He didn't give me the final, like he didn't go with some of the ideas that I gave him right off the bat. I think because I sort of overloaded him with information right off the bat. I didn't have my folders yet, so I kind of created my own folder going out to see him, but I think it went well. He was the one I think that I was the most, I don't want to say scared. I mean, but I feared the conversation the most, you know.
Because you thought he would say no? Cause.
Well, I mean, he ended up leaving his advisor to come with me.
Yep. Right?
And it was his other advisor. It's interesting. His other advisor had gotten so conservative over the years that he did very little stock business with him at all. I mean, and then I understood why he did this. He was reassigned by his former advisor because his advisor was retiring. I mean, he just retired, but he didn't communicate it very well that he was retiring. He just saw a new name appear on the statement.
Great.
Rob's the kind of guy that I think if I ignored him too much, he'd be pretty clear about telling me to go take a hike and then he'd move on. I wouldn't need to call him anymore. He'd go find his own deal. That's all right. You know, so, but anyway, so yeah, this worked out pretty well. We've had some, so the trick with this, you know, I think the difficult thing about this guy's, I don't want to let him down. And I told him that. I said, look, I think about you and your situation almost every day. I mean, you are one of the most important relationships, and he seems surprised by that. But it's true. I mean, your top relationships, you think about a lot, you know, all the time. And, so I didn't want to let him down. But he's been a more emotional person. He's a very quick decision maker, most of the time. But in like this last market downturn, he panicked and you can tell why he was successful as an executive doing what he was doing, but then he demands action right that moment sort of thing. You got somebody behind you there. That's nice. That's the service of the smile. So yeah, I was more, I think his success, I think it's just important. I've seen him go through a lot with his wife, with his child, with his mother, sister, everything. I mean, I know everything about him. Right. You know, so yeah, I don't want to lose him.
Well, don't worry. I mean, you'll have no turnover. None. You won't have any turnover unless you want it. I always tell people you're gonna have turnover. The question is, who's gonna make the choice?
Yeah, sure.
You know, if you don't cut your book down to a manageable size and you can't give the client regular contact that they know about, then you're going to lose one of your top 10 clients instead of one of your, you know, your bottom 10. So you got a choice. Who do you want to give away? Your top clients or your bottom clients? As far as I'm concerned, it's not much of a choice.
Not much of a choice at all. That's right.
So I think what you got to do is you'll become, once, have you put in the scheduler yet? Have you seen that?
I went through and looked at, I watched some of the videos from Cindy, as far as doing it. And I was going to get back with her this week and see if I could set it up. We had talked once on the phone about it, about just taking my 30, you know, at least get 30 or so it going right away.
So do you have an assistant? I mean, why are you doing this?
So my assistant is kind of, so we've had a, so I've gotten now an intern, a part-time person who I'm going to be sharing with one of the other guys here in the branch. But my assistant, we just had another one, my backup, go out on maternity leave. And so now my assistant is covering, she's covering four FAs in the office right now. So we have a little issue. She sort of freaked out.
Yeah. I don't blame her.
So yeah, she's not going too well with her right this second.
Okay. Well, this is not much leverage. We're going to make a plan, and then the plan is going to free you up.
It's been hard for her to see the big picture in this. So.
Never read the book. Has she read the book?
She has not read the book. So the question is, would she read the book? Maybe if I can spoon feed her.
If you what?
If I could spoon feed her, sometimes with the guys, you know, when I need them to digest a lot of information at one time, I try to break it down in little small things so they don't realize they're tackling the whole one bite at a time, you know.
Right. you gotta teach her what's in it for her. That's the game. We all say, oh, this is wonderful, but what's in it for me? In the end. So you got to figure out what's in it for her. Well, if you could get everybody on the, you know, to do what you're doing, her job would be so easy.
Oh gosh, don't you know it? It would be.
That's what's in it for her. It's in your best interest to have everybody doing supernova. I really don't understand why managers don't have every FA in their office doing supernova. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense because it just, think about it, it just changes your job. Your job becomes so easy. You don't have to do anything compliance-wise. Now you've got to take care of the home office compliance wise, but the real worry is that there's really something going on that you don't know about, right? Well, and you say, well, no, I'm fine. These guys are great. You never know. With this, you know, because if they won't do supernova, well, maybe there's a reason, you know, I mean, why don't people do supernova? Think about it, right? Because they don't want to be tied down. Now we say process equals freedom. Okay. organization equals freedom. Those guys think organization equals jail. They have to be there. They have to call. They have to be organized. Guys that want to be screw-offs don't like Supernova. They like the fact that they can just decide that they want to go, I don't know, go hunting this afternoon. Right? Cover for me, I'm going hunting. You know, it's duck season, I'm gone. It's, you know, it's opening day of golf, I'm gone. You know, it's, well, with Supernova, you got to organize. You got to say, okay, I'm going to be gone the first day of hunting season. I'm going to be gone the first day of, you know, when the golf course opens, and you got to plan it. Now, you can still do those things, but you just have to plan it. It's like a surgeon not telling his nurse he's going to take off, and she scheduled surgery for him. Right? You got three appointments plus surgery this afternoon. I'm going to go play golf. No. You can't do that, you know. Person has spent the whole weekend freaking out because they're going to have surgery this morning. You're just not going to show up and just cancel it? It better be a good reason. So by getting everybody on Supernova, you will have a professional office that you don't really have to care for very much.
Yeah, I've gotten a few interested.
And I'm not selling Supernova because I want the money or, you know, I want the revenue. I give it all away. I'm just telling you from, look, you and I connected as soon as we met, right? So I want you to do well. Well, for you to do well, you've got to run everything in your life efficiently. And 50% of your life at this point is your office. You may not think so, but it could be at any moment 100%. Something really goes wrong, right? The roof leaks or the hurricane comes or something, right? COVID happens, whatever. So you're running the ship, but at the same time you're running your own business. But the ship, in an emergency, the whole ship will take priority. So you better have the ship running really well. Or give it away to somebody else to run.
I don't think I haven't thought of that option too.
So. Well, it's a real, you know, the question, a lot of people in your situation don't want to give it up because there's nobody else. And if they give it to somebody else, they get a jerk that they have to report to.
Right.
Or, you know, and so it becomes a matter of, look, it's just, I'd rather do it and put up with the garbage than I would reassign. It's like reassigning an account, right? It's an account that takes 50% of your time and pays you 10% of your revenues. So the question, does that make any long, if you're going to go into management, it makes all the sense in the world. If you're not, and you're going to maybe be an FA for the rest of your life, then it makes no sense. Okay? I'm just, you know, just telling you.
Yeah, no, I get it. You know, I don't see, you know, sometimes it's difficult to see where the management thing actually goes to, you know, because it is sort of, at some point it does sort of, you know, I want to say stupid things, but I mean, sometimes it feels like babysitting, you know, the office, but, you know, and just trying to make sure everything is functional when people come in so they can sort of produce and do what they do, you know, and it's easier to keep the boat stable, I guess, that way, as opposed to sort of losing control of it. I don't know how to explain it sometimes.
Look, I did this my whole life, okay?
Right.
I completely understand. And if you like it and you like being a coach, and it gives you what you need, then do it. I did it. Remember, I gave up everything to do it because I love being a coach, because I was a better doubles player than I was a singles player in college and high school and tennis and every sport. So I'm a person that wants to help others. And I don't have very much interest in just, you know, people, it's so weird. People think I have a big ego. I have a good self-image, but I don't give a shit about the stuff. I never have. I care about, you know, I get a thrill when somebody else does really well.
Yeah. And
maybe that's ego because I helped them. I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I get the same feeling.
Yeah. So if you like that, then let's, what you can do both very well. Okay. Very, very well. But you just have to be a little more efficient than the other guys. You have to have the office supernova. You have to have your practice supernova. You have to have the investment process supernova. Everything about you has to be really organized. And you must have leverage. So you probably haven't. Did you have a chance to read the Supernova Multiplier? Second book.
I'm almost halfway through it.
Okay.
Chapter four.
You come to a chapter called Radical Delegation. My wife doesn't like that because I delegate to her. She doesn't like, she said, I don't work for you, but you can see I've got her pretty well trained.
Yeah. Well, at least she knows when it's being delegated, right?
Oh yeah, she does. It's so funny. You have these lines, you know, it's like you over there and me over here. I'll do this, but I won't do this. Radical delegation is this concept of you have two jobs. One, and this would be for your job as a manager. You've got two jobs. One is to, as a manager, your job is to train your FAs and to bring in new, bigger FAs. Your job as an FA is to train your clients and bring in bigger clients. That's all. Those are your two jobs. If you're doing something else, you're not doing your job.
And that's a great way to look at it.
I mean, that's all. Like,
yeah.
That's all. Coach your FAs and bring in new, bigger FAs. And coach your clients and bring in new, bigger clients. Mm-hmm. Your job, think about it, really, if you could make every client into a center of influence, you'd have, let's say, theoretically, 100 salesmen working for you.
Absolutely.
That's all their job is, to bring in one new client a year that's going to be bigger than them.
Mm-hmm.
That's their job. And if, you know, and if you think you've got a great 100 salesmen, then you just find another good FA and give them those 100 and you take the next 100. Or you just give those 100 away and you just keep the top 100 always. You can give them away or you can form a partnership. That's either way. That part, people say, should I do that or not? I said, it's up to you. If you want to be a manager, you can have, you know, 5 FAs working for you. And that's fine. Or if you don't like being a manager, I have one person that's just terrible. She hates it. And so I said, don't give the clients away. Don't split them. Don't do anything. Just give them away. Okay. Bye bye. you keep down to like 70 clients and just keep every building and building and building till, you know, you have 70 clients that are each giving you each have 5 million.
Right. Yeah.
That's the game, right? If you got one, you can have 100, just getting more of that person. That's all. And, but you can't do it unconsciously. So what we're going to work on is becoming consciously competent. So you were good enough to get him. So you have skills. The question is, are you using those skills? And do you know what they are? Can you teach those skills? And that's what we're going to learn to do them so well we can teach them. And what I find is that people will practice golf every day, but they won't practice their practice. They won't practice their business at all. And they think they should somehow be able to just do it. But they know they can't just do it when they play golf. They know they have to practice.
Mm-hmm. Right. Course changes.
Well, and
all the time, right?
Time changes and that too, but just having the skills, just having the swing takes years and years and years of practice. And sometimes you never get it. And so do they practice their words and do they practice their scripts and do they practice on each other and do they practice with clients? No. They just go and try it once or twice, and when it doesn't work perfectly, they quit. That's like a little kid coming out and not expecting to hit the golf ball the first time, and they miss, and so they quit. Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's crazy. So what we want to do is create my granddaughter, who's 6, I said, perfect practice makes perfect. And she said, no, Bobo, practice makes progress. I said, that's much better.
That's pretty good.
Isn't that good?
Mm-hmm. No, I understand that completely.
The mental setup for that is we're interested in progress, not perfect. We're interested in getting there. So, this, you need to know the team structure in chapter 3 because you will teach it. So I'd like you to learn Supernova so you can teach it. Now, if you need to, you can, you really should use the people from Touchstone to teach you how the segmentation tools that they have. They have something called PAR. So get in touch with your Touchstone representative and have him run a PAR on your book. And the PAR will help you to see exactly where your practice is. It's just somebody else doing it makes it so much easier.
Right.
Delegation, right?
You know, I think the Touchstone rep came in and they did this maybe 3 years ago. Sound about right. But I mean, they didn't, I don't know how much traction they got. I think they introduced the thought, but.
Right. But they're working with us now and I like them and they, you know, they get the fact that they've got to create value. I mean, nobody's promising anything. It's just, you got to create value in order to be of value. Right. So they want to create value and then they're very serious about it. They work very well with Supernova. It's a segmentation part of Supernova. It's the old Hess report. and they just have taken it over, and they have the staff to be able to leverage it. So when I'm working with somebody, I always recommend that they get in touch with Touchstone and bring their rep in and have them do the PAR program, because it fits beautifully on the front end. Because okay. I can't, you know, I don't have to sit down and go through all account, you know, your accounts and look at them and tell you what, you know, this and that. You got to do that yourself. So that's leverage. The other thing is you should do is, you should hire one of these virtual, VEAs, what do they call them? Virtual. What happened here? There you go. I can't read my own writing. They're called VEAs. They're technology people.
That's a virtual experience?
Virtual engagement associate.
Engagement, okay. Now, early on, you gave me the name of
right.
the place that you, that's developing the website and things like that?
Yes. Carlos Noriega. But get on there, get with them, because they're getting a waiting list now. You can't get on. So get on their waiting list.
Okay.
This is leverage too, okay?
That's Virtual Engagement Associates?
Yep, VEA.
Okay.
The other thing that guys are doing is using the digital vault to communicate and to use it kind of like a CRM system, client management system. Now I want you to use Outlook and I want you to use the scheduler, but sometimes when you're trying to communicate with your assistant, it's good to have a digital communications tool, a virtual vault. And that's a digital vault. It's inside. It's just your communication inside your system. So it's just, you know, I share with you those things that are best practices. And, you know, I'm glad you're reading the book, because the multiplier is kind of like 10 years later, what did we learn? Mm-hmm. So the first book is great. You can memorize it. But the second book is kind of like, wow, okay, way up to date.
That's mind-blowing. It's yeah. like, you know, I told my wife, it was like, why didn't somebody put this in my hands day one? You know, it's crazy. Insane.
Well, do it for your associates, okay? Tell them. This is what, just say to them, look, I'm really pissed because why didn't somebody give me this when I started, you know? This would have been so much easier. So here's the book. Read it. And, you know, make it part of your practice. And you know, if you read it and you say, that's me, then we'll talk. Your complex wants you guys to do this.
Yeah, definitely.
Where do you report into?
To the Atlanta Perimeter Complex with, it was Walter Jameson. Do you know Walter? You probably knew Walter.
Yeah.
It's now Rich Vaughn. So, and I told Rich week before last what I was doing.
Yeah. I mean, they just don't have enough time to get everybody in there, but they love this stuff. And I love the fact that, I mean, I don't see firms doing what your firm is doing in terms of like this, you know, Virtual Engagement Associates. They got 60 people in that department now. I'm really impressed. And they're going to train them to be financial planners too. And then eventually get them out in the field and have them become FAs. It's a great pipeline. And it's a great pipeline to create diversity, because you're teaching them how to run the practice from a technology point of view. Then just think if you could make them all CFPs, and now you put them in an office. Are you kidding? I mean, who cares if they're red, green, black, or male or female? You got a valuable person. You want them on your team, right? And that, so you get rid of that stigma or whatever it is. People don't want certain people on their teams. So you create real value before you ever try and solve the diversity issue. Smart, huh?
Yeah. No, that's pretty amazing. But that Virtual Engagement Associates, is that through? That's an outside thing, or is that?
No, that's inside. No, that's in your company.
No kidding. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Right. That's what I'm here for.
No, that's fantastic. So I described the one of the descriptions I gave to somebody the other day was, I said these different roles, you know, like planning and that kind of stuff. I said, right now, I feel like I should be your director of resource management. So I said, you have all these resources within Morgan Stanley, including me, and I've got to direct you to what resources fit the bill for you. And so that's what you're doing right now. You're kind of my director of resource management.
Well, it's part of it, right? If we're going to do radical delegation, we don't have, you know, a whole team to delegate to. So we've got to create a virtual team. So you create this virtual team and you take advantage of these people that are out there that nobody knows about, and all of a sudden you've got yourself a virtual team.
Yeah. So is okay. I've also got a young man I think I told you about. He's trying to get him engaged. He's willing and ready to go. He's from Merrill Lynch that I hired about 4 months ago. And so as far as some of these clients, that's where he's going to go. And I've had him start to call a few of them already. So
awesome.
So that's good, and that'll help him as well. But I think what I'll do is I'll give him the book and get him copies of the book as well.
Right. You want to train him as you go along. Have a call with him every week and teach him what you were taught this week.
Okay.
Okay. So you can even give him a copy of the workbook and say, look, you need to do this.
Okay.
Just have a copy of the workbook, print it out for him, or send him the PDF and tell him to copy it and put it in the three reading binder. And then every week you'll go through it with him.
Okay.
Because you want to train him anyway, right? He's a new guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also I've got one of my other really important centers of influence. His son, we've got him in the pipeline trying to get him hired, and it looks like we're going to get him hopefully hired, and he would come in as a junior person as well. So
is he already registered, or?
He's not registered. So he would have to pass we'll have to get him where he'll pass before he walks in the door.
Okay.
So he'll, anyway, he'd be good. And that starts to tie in more of a team that I've got in my mind, you know, because my large client, or my really good center of influence, great client, has referred lots of people, who's getting better about referring the right kind of person. He is a real rainmaker as far as who he's connected with and who he's willing to refer. We just have to, you know, you sort of have to tell him what you're looking for, who you're looking for.
Right.
He works hard to make it happen. He makes the contacts for you, sets up the meetings on your behalf.
What's his job? What's he do?
He's a pastor.
Oh, yeah, this is the pastor guy. Yeah.
And so his son has been exceptional at sales, and about every, you know, 2 or 3 years he gets lured away because he's been good at what he's done at the previous employer to go to the next one because they need a good salesperson. And, so he's sort of gotten tired of all the, you know, on the road traveling and that kind of stuff. And COVID is sort of, right. You know, he does a lot of Zoom meetings and things, but anyway, he's a guy that I'd like to get into this business, and we're pretty far down that road right this second, but he would be here. His father would be out helping, you know, make connections.
Wow.
It would be a really powerful core model, you know.
I love it.
To start with. Yeah. Yeah, he's already.
We're about out of time, but that's a good plan. I like it. With this guy from Merrill, you and this young salesman, I think you got yourself a team. Now you just need to have your sales assistant on board with your vision of the future.
Yeah, and it's been,
maybe you need a new sales assistant. I don't know. That's up to you.
No, I'm with you. So I've thought about some things. I just don't know whether they're good ideas or not. But I pay her, you know, she gets, of course, her salary and things like that, but I also pay her, whatever it is, $300 or somewhere in that ballpark every month. And, I thought about going to more of a bonus type situation because I know she just treats that as part of her salary. She doesn't realize it's,
right,
doing extra things, you know, and so go to more of a quarterly bonus where she would get that bonus plus more, you know, let's just get on board here together and you're working for that purpose.
Right.
Is that leverage?
Leverage. You got to have her working for you. I'm sorry. It's just, you gotta have her heart in it. Where her, and you know, and everybody says, well, it's, you know, it's about the principle of the thing. And you go, no, I learned long ago, it's about the money. People have principles, and like you and I are talking about, that we do it for a lot of different reasons. But money is scorekeeping. Money is money. Money you need. And so, it sounds contradictory, but in reality, if you're looking for a rational why people do a lot of things, it's the money.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to say in lawsuits, people said, I want to sue them for the principle of it. I go, never sue anybody for the principle of it. It's going to cost you a fortune.
Yeah.
You're going to be pissed, and it's going to take a tremendous amount of time. So we understand the reality of the money. All right. So that's one side of it. The other side of it is, you know, what's really motivating that person? They want the money. It's like, why do guys leave a firm? Well, it's, you know, 30% pull, 70% push. But if they, you know, in the end, if the money's there, it's enough to push them over the edge.
Yeah.
So don't tell me they didn't do it for the money. They all say, oh, better research or some bullshit, you know.
Right.
Better research. Yeah, I always love that one. So just know that, right? So when you're working with these guys, know that they love working with you, but they're also interested in the money. So the key is, as a team leader, as a leader in the office, you want to always be teaching them how they're going to make more money and where their future is. So make them paint the picture of where you're going and how you're going to get there and what's in it for them, how much they'll be making by when. But they have to do this, this, and this to do that.
Okay. Yeah, and that's okay. What I love about this so far. It's teachable.
Yeah, it's all very common sense, and you go, wow, yeah, I know that. Plato said, learning is remembering. Well, we kind of is. I mean, you kind of know all this, but you just sort of sometimes we forget it. We don't use it. We knew it. We did used it when we were in some sport, but then we forget it and we don't use it in this game. So it's just like a sport. You want to be the best? It takes work. And the best pays really well in this business. You don't need to go to another business ever. You don't need to move to another firm. You just turn this into a money machine. And it can be for all the right reasons, doing all the right things. And it's great. It's great. And it's not that hard.
It doesn't have to be. You're right.
It doesn't. I mean, with 70 clients, you can be doing 25 million. You just, no more work than what you're doing now. That's the key. You just go, wow, I never thought about that. I could? Yes. I've seen it. 25 clients doing 25 million.
Wow.
I met a guy doing that. I was on the speaking stage with him. We were in the green room. And he said, so what do you do? I said, I do Supernova 1242. And he goes, all of a sudden he got white and he left the room. He came back like 20 minutes later. And I said, what happened? What's wrong? He said, I realized I hadn't called one of my best clients in 2 months. I need your Supernova thing. And he had 25 clients doing 25 million and he had no system. So don't think that just because somebody does a lot of business that they're any good. They aren't. They got to have process.
They do have to have process.
Yeah. All right. I got 3 minutes. Goodbye.
Okay. Rob, thank you so much. And I look forward to talking with you next week.
All right, Derek. Thanks, buddy. Bye.
Take care. Bye.